This podcast is made possible by the generosity of our listeners. Thank you.
Welcome to the Creation Science
for Kids
show. Our first parents messed up big time. What was going to happen now that God's got their attention? Let's look at the consequences they pulled on their heads and some of the most serious verses in the Bible. Then let's plan some creation field trips and other exciting ways to learn about God's world and finish up by flying away with ultralights. Praise the Lord. I will give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart, in the company of the upright, in the congregation. Great are the works of the Lord, studied by all who delight in them. Full of splendor and majesty is his work, and his righteousness endures forever. He has caused his wondrous works to be remembered. The Lord is gracious and merciful. Psalm 111, verses 1 through 4. This is episode 79 of the podcast where we learn about Jesus our Creator and his amazing world. Hi, I'm Sherry Fields, your host, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Joseph.
Hi.
And Hope.
Hi.
To follow along with what we're looking at, check out the show notes, creationscience4kids.com/sorrow/079. And be sure to listen to the end for the punny science joke of the day. So, we have gotten to what happened because Adam and Eve disobeyed and ate the fruit, even though God had said not to. Joseph, would you read Genesis 3, verses 16 through the first part of verse 19, please?
Unto the woman he said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. And unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree, of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also, and thistles, shall it bring forth to thee. And thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread.
Thank you very much. Okay, well, I think you're getting almost too old for this show. Your voice is dropping. It sounds really cool. So, he starts by talking to the woman. All right, Hope, do you know what sorrow is?
When you sin?
It causes sorrow, but do you know what the word sorrow means?
You're sad?
That's right. I actually read some commentators that were just saying that by God multiplying Eve's sorrow, that he was just going to make her have a hard time delivering babies. As any human being on the planet knows, we experience far more sadness than just when it's time to deliver a baby. We would take almost any pain if we knew after we had the baby, everything would be hunky-dory and just wonderful and roses and sunshine ever after. That's not the case. Eve was in for a lot of sadness, a lot of pain, a lot of crying, far more than just getting a baby out of her body. Now, so that's fairly straightforward. Eve, you're going to be miserable. And thy conception. What do you think is going on there, Joseph? Do you know what that conception is talking about?
No.
Okay, conception is when you have a baby started inside of you. So this is something we can't know what God's original plan was because, again, is there any way we can scientifically examine the world as it was before Adam and Eve sinned?
No,
it's not possible. So all we can do is guess at it based on what God says here. So we kind of get the idea that maybe we would have only been capable of having children like every 10 years or 50 years. We do know different animals, especially usually the larger the animal, the further apart their babies are. Like you look at elephants are pregnant for 2 years, so they only have a new baby every 4 to 5 years or so. So you look at that and then you look at bunny rabbits and they can grow up and have their own first, I want to say batch or crop of babies. That's not right. But their first babies at 6 months old. So they can literally multiply like rabbits. And you get down to bugs and stuff and they have hundreds and thousands of babies real, real quick. So we get the impression that God had originally designed for babies to come far apart, which would be kind of nice if you had a lot of time to spend with that little one, get back to normal, and that things would be spread out. Now God is saying you're going to have babies closer together, and you're going to be sad. And then in sorrow thou shalt bring forth children. Hopi, do you know what that means? When you're bringing forth a child, that means you're having a baby. And when a mommy is having a baby, it hurts. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah. They have to go to the hospital. Do you know why we go to the hospital most of the time? What can happen when it's time for a baby to be born? Do you know?
So we won't get sick.
Won't get sick or won't get hurt. That there are a lot of things that can go wrong. It used to be that a mommy was very likely to die having a baby. That lots of people, their moms would die having their baby brother or sister, and everyone was very sad. Now we go to the hospital and keep everybody safe. That's much better, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And we even have medicines to help with how much it hurts.
Yep.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, now you do. But are babies worth having anyway?
Yeah.
Yes, babies are wonderful, even if they do hurt you. So anytime you know a mommy who's going to have a baby, she's got one inside her tummy, you can pray for her. God, please help her, because you know, because of sin, because Eve listened to the serpent, she's going to have a hard time having that baby. Please keep her safe and help her to be more comfortable. Now, there's one more bit. This is a very puzzling and big idea, Joseph. And Hope, you need to listen, because this comes into play even when you've got children. When you've got boys and girls growing up together, they experience some of this. God said to Eve that her desire would be to her husband, and he shall rule over thee, he said. Any ideas what that's talking about?
No.
Okay, so we've heard some ideas, and again, all of this, it's kind of puzzling. Here's a really big idea that can come in handy as you start thinking about the Bible. The more you learn, the more you realize there is that we still cannot understand. Okay, let me back up. Can we understand everything there is to know about God?
Of course not.
Very good. Well answered. So he gives us all these things that are like clues and puzzles and setting us in the right direction, but we can never have it all in a box where our mind can figure it all out and say, oh yeah, I understand everything there is possible to know about this. So I heard one person describe it as mystery, as in it's infinitely knowable, that you can know like that the Trinity is, that God is one God in three persons, and understand that, but there's always more to learn. You'll never get to the end and say, okay, I understand that all. So we have some pretty good ideas what God is talking about in this phrase, but we can never fully understand what God meant. One of the things I've heard somebody describe, that when God made Adam, he made him out of
dust.
Dust out of the ground. So it's very common for men to find that they love to focus. They find their joy and delight in being outdoors, working with the natural world, with rocks and dirt and wood and hunting and all that stuff. Then what did he make Eve out of?
Adam's rib.
Adam, out of another human being. So it's very common for women to find their greatest joy and delight in relationships. So that's one of the, it makes a lot of sense that when God says your desire will be toward your husband, that she would care very much about him, be focused on him. But also that next phrase, and he shall rule over you. You probably have some idea what that could mean. What would be your guess if you had to describe, and Adam will rule over you, Eve?
He'll always have the higher position.
Yeah. So this is where you get that in the family, you have to have somebody who has the final say. And God said that will be the man. We also know, and this is one of the sad things about the world, throughout time and space, and if you look at every human being who's ever lived long enough to interact with others, that men are almost always in charge of women, sometimes treating them basically as slaves And that's still true in many places today. And it's often because men just have bigger, stronger bodies, so they can push their weight around literally. But even in God's design, somebody's got to be the boss. Does that mean that women are slaves?
No.
What are we told in the New Testament about how men and women are an analogy for something? Do you remember?
God and humanity.
God, humanity, and there's one other thing. So this is in 1 Corinthians 11. It says, just as God the Father is the boss, the head of Christ, Christ is the head of the man, and the man is the head of the woman. So is God treating Jesus as a slave?
No.
No. So just as Jesus is co-equal with God, same in essence, he is God, but yet his position is that God the Father is the boss. He is the one who says, go and do, that it works like that with men and women. So that's a good way. There's nothing wrong with it, but with sin, you now had to have more structure. Everybody couldn't just do what they wanted to, because if everybody in the family just did whatever popped into their brain all the time, what would happen to Hope?
I would get hurt.
Yeah, you probably would. And people probably wouldn't do much to help you. That we need to have structure. We need somebody to say, hey, do this. And also, when you're the boss, you're also in charge and need to be aware of those under you and what they need. So it's not bad, but it was now necessary. Just as later with Noah, we'll see that human government becomes necessary. So it was even back here in the family that you needed somebody to be the boss. That doesn't mean it's easy on you guys. In fact, it means you have more responsibility. Okay, so then he turns to Adam and he said, you listen to your wife. He puts it right to him. He doesn't let him get away with it. You chose to listen to her and ate when I told you not to. What's he saying? What is he telling Adam? You had the choice to listen to either
me or your wife.
Yeah, and you chose
your wife.
Uh-huh. So, whoa, I bet Adam didn't enjoy that very much. Because that really showed him up, didn't it? No more hiding. What happened?
He got cursed.
What got cursed?
The ground got cursed.
Yeah. So this is a really fascinating idea. A lot of creation science has to do with what's coming up next. This curse on the ground, that the whole world, especially in biology, things changed. Here, God talks about specifically the plants. Later, we'll find out that the world was full of violence. We look at the fossil record and we see all kinds of things eating each other. Before this, Hopi, when God first made everything, what did they all eat?
Food.
What kind of food?
Healthy food.
Very healthy food. Joseph, can you remind her, please?
Vegetables and other plants.
Plants. Yes. So this has changed how their food source is. What does he say is going to happen in order for them to get food?
In sorrow.
Yeah, so just as Eve was going to have sorrow, and we can see it's related to her children and her husband being her boss and all that stuff, Adam was going to have sorrow, suffering, sadness from having to feed himself every day. And what was going to cause that sorrow?
Thorns and thistles.
Right. So instead of the earth just bringing forth lots of food that you just say, oh, I'm hungry. You go walk up to a tree, pick some fruit and eat it. You walk up to a plant. Now you're going to have stinging nettles and you're going to have prickles and you're going to have thistles and all kinds of things, making it miserable to go out and have to get food. And also perhaps those would have helped feed them, and now they're just in the way. All the weeds, all the things that cause problems. And this would affect all the way down to the bacteria and other microbes that cause all the rots and different diseases that affect plants as well as people. And also, he's going to have to become a farmer, the herb of the field. He's not going to be able to find enough food just growing wild to feed him and his family. He's going to have to actively grow extra seeds to have enough to eat. And is it going to be easy?
No.
He's going to?
Sweat.
What's that tell you?
He's going to have to work hard.
Right. Man was going to have to work hard. Is that all a bad thing that you have to?
No, it's not.
What would happen if you were free to do whatever you wanted all day long and knew you would have enough food to eat and you'd be warm and comfortable? What would you end up doing with all your time?
Lay around.
Yeah. And if you didn't have the Holy Spirit or somebody else saying, do something good with your time, would you be doing things that were just fine and innocent and good?
No.
What would most people end up doing?
Wrong things.
Yeah. And we see that real quick. Even with this curse in place, the world was still a beautiful, good place where you could live for 900 years and people had enough time on their hands to get into so much trouble. God got horribly disgusted by it. We still see that today. There's an old phrase, idle hands are the devil's playground, that having to work hard makes it harder for us to think about sin all day. We have to think about, what am I going to eat? How am I going to take care of my family? And that is not a bad thing because it forces us to do what we need to be useful, and to ask God for help.
Yeah.
Because he's in charge of the plants growing in the seasons. You see that a lot later on in the Bible where people ask, and we still have Thanksgiving and stuff to say, thank you, God, because we worked hard, but if you hadn't sent the rain and all, we wouldn't be alive. So you see the whole nature of life had changed from more or less being on vacation and being able to do whatever you wanted to. Life is going to be rough. It wasn't going to get any easier, but they needed that to turn them back to God instead of to sin that they had now chosen. All right, before we move on, there's one thing that I wanted to show you. People who want to say that millions of years are true and God created have some major problems right here with what God said. If you look at the fossil record, you will find that there is, obviously, for something to be a fossil, are you a fossil?
No.
Why not?
Because I'm alive.
Yeah. To be a fossil, something has to be
dead.
Dead. So that by itself, if things weren't dying, they weren't being fossilized. And then when you look in the fossil record, not only do you see dead things, but you have they've found brain tumors, like bone tumors and stuff, where arthritis in dinosaurs, we can tell that they had. And have a look at this page. This is one of my favorite articles. John Mackay had gone up to Canada. He's from Australia, but he went to Canada. There he is. See the rocks he's finding?
That looks like Grandpa.
Yeah, he is a grandpa man. And it shows the rocks that they found, and you scroll down and down. Look at this, Joseph. Look at the fossil they found. What is that?
A stick.
Stick, but with what on it?
Thorns.
Thorns. In the fossil record, you have fossilized thorns buried, and they'll say, of course, that these are millions of years old. In order for people to believe in millions of years and in Genesis, they cannot believe that thorns and thistles started with Adam and Eve, because nobody thinks Adam and Eve lived millions of years ago because they were obviously fully human and could talk. There's a couple of illustrations. Dan Lita has done one that I really like. Here's the one that Creation Ministries International uses, where you've got Adam and Eve standing on top, and Eve says, oh, Adam, what a perfect world. And Adam says, yes, Eve, all the plants are so nice to touch. But the drawing shows that they're surrounded by prickles and thorns, and then underneath them there are dead fossil dinosaurs and spiny plant fossils, and showing that is the pretzel twist of your brain that you have to believe in order to believe in millions of years and Genesis. So we know that the fossils were not already in the ground when Adam and Eve were around, and that things changed. Now, I did find one article, if you wanted to look it up. It talks about thorns. They're actually so you think of a rose thorn. It's got that little spike that comes out, like you were saying, that looked like a tree. So you've got that stick, and then it's got this little thing that comes out of it, and it comes out to a poke. All you would need is to change the DNA for a regular stem or branch off of it and change the DNA just a little, and you get a thorn. You think of like a holly leaf comes to that sharp, hard point. It would be very easy to have the DNA change in that, to have take it from a soft leaf with rounded edges and turn it into that sharp point. That a lot of the things that make things dangerous and painful are very small DNA tweaks. It's easy for us to picture. Do we know God did it that way? No. But he says it changed. We believe him. And science says it's perfectly reasonable to believe that God could have changed an existing plant like roses to go from smooth and comfortable to brush up against to painful very simply. So, yeah, God was not soft on our first parents. By the way, there's one place in the Bible that thorns come up very strongly. Hopi, can you think of a story, a Bible story that talks about thorns?
Yes.
Which one?
Jesus has a thorny crown on his head.
Exactly. Very good. So a lot of us see that as part of what Jesus was doing. He was taking our sin and he was going to destroy it. So it seems we can see how it makes a lot of sense for him to actually, physically, in his body, actually get blood coming out of his head because of the pain of real, ordinary, sharp, miserable thorns being forced into his head. Nobody told those guys to do it. They just did it. And yet you can see how God would have said, yes, this fits. Jesus was taking the punishment. I cursed the world with thorns and thistles because of Adam's sin. Jesus had to endure the pain of thorns because of Adam's sin so that he could make it all go away. And so that more blood came out so he could cleanse us and make us clean. So terrible and sorrowful and sad as it makes us, it still reminds us how good God is and how amazing what Jesus did for us is, doesn't it?
Yes.
All right. I had been wondering, what in the world could I cover for the middle of the podcast? And I happened to see where Ken Ham had posted what they're up to at the Creation Museum over the next few months. And I was very excited to see he actually called his article from the 30th of December, 2018, Raising Up Creation Scientists. And here's what he had to say. A recent article by a secular blogger claimed that children who aren't taught evolution won't get that spark of interest that propels them to become scientists. Well, at Answers in Genesis, we don't believe that you need to be taught and believe evolution in order to be passionate about discovering more about what God has made. And this certainly bears true throughout history. Many of the greatest scientists of all time were Christians who studied nature for God's glory, and many of them lived at the time of Darwin. We want more scientists like that, and that's why we hold our Explore Days and Explore 5-day summer camp at the Creation Museum. So, good for Ken Ham. Look at the list of things that they're going to be covering extra special at the Creation Museum for kids. They're going to have forensics. Do you know what that is?
Or that they do it in CSI.
Exactly. So what do you think that has to do with CSI?
It has to do, like, discovering what has happened to, like, a body.
Yes. So how to use the evidence to see if you can figure out what happened with a crime, something in the past. So they're doing that here in just a couple weeks on January 18th. Biology, microscopes, genetics, human anatomy, and more all the way through into May. And then they're going to have their summer, that 5-day camp is going to also be on forensics. And it's going to be with, let's see, it's not a PhD, but she's got a doctorate in education as a forensic scientist. And she's going to come in and talk about fingerprints and trace analysis of hair and impressions. Looks really cool. What I liked when I looked up the website, the price is a lot better. Now you have to pay for your food and a place to stay, but it's way more affordable than the other full camp that is creation-minded. And that's Camp Infinity. If you have the money, theirs is a world-class camp, and they actually go visit the Ark Encounter and Creation Museum, but it costs a lot more cash. So those are two really cool places. So I thought, you know what? I know there's more. Let's see if I can pull up a few more just to give you an idea of what's available. And then I'm going to send you to see what's around in your area. In Akron, Ohio, they have the Fossils and Science Center, and they're constantly doing special programs for kids. That's mostly what they're focused on, is being a resource for local kids to care about science and creation. Down on the Florida coast, Krista Jewett and a team have a place called Saltwater Studies. They take kids to the ocean to look at animals and rocks and things. I found a place called Heart of America Science Resource Center. They'll take you to dig for dinosaurs and teach you to use a telescope. And they're open every Saturday during the summer. You can call and do a group. And they have a 3-day camp. They even go visit Yellowstone. And then there's also going to be a fossil float where they go searching for fossils along the Peace River in Florida with creation studies in April. So those are things that I know of going on, especially for getting kids hands-on experiencing science, and it's done with young earth, biblical creationists. It's really exciting. And if you want to see if there's more in your local area, you can always check out the directory that International Association for Creation has. And I've asked Stephen Policastro, who started it, and said, could you make a special page just for us to find places? Right now, you have to go through the member directory and look for the ones that have the hands-on. But you can always check what's local in your area and call them and see what they have. And they also have the Creation Trail app. And that's something where you can go to your local zoo or museum, read about what they're saying, compare their signs that talk about millions of years and evolution, and compare it to what we know from the evidence and what the Bible tells us. So you can do that anywhere. But to get hands-on and get your kids excited about science is something we very dearly want to. Because, Hopi, if you go to the zoo, who made the animals?
God.
God did. So do we care about what God made and how hard he worked?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what about if you went to look at stars? Who made the stars?
God.
Yeah. And if you're doing something with chemistry to figure out how different stuff in a jar works, who made the things that are in the jar?
God.
God. Anything you study in science, God invented. And it's cool to see what he made. He did a good job, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So what do you have for us today, Joseph?
Hang gliders.
Awesome.
Hang gliders are kind of like kites, but hold a person up without a string. Their history goes back to the end of the 6th century AD. The Chinese made kites that were strong enough and also had the right build to hold up an average person.
Did they actually carry people?
They could.
Okay.
Possibly.
That's cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. Hang gliders were then rethought later by Leonardo da Vinci. He had designed a foot-powered glider. He didn't build it, but he had designed it. Mm-hmm. So, in the 1980s...
Wow. Okay.
They started making them again.
Wow.
And designing them. They were really unsafe because they are modeled after how a bird flies. They hadn't yet understood it, so it took about 10 years. Mm-hmm. In the 1990s, they finally had a scientific breakthrough.
Do you know what it's called when we look at the natural world, things that God designed and copy, do our best to copy it? It's a very important concept.
I'm trying to remember it.
Biomimetics.
Biomimetics.
And mimetic to mimic. So we're constantly mimicking God's designs because he's the most amazing engineer in the world. So they figured out how to copy him better.
And a person named Otto, how do you pronounce that?
Lilienthal.
Lilienthal built one of the very first controllable gliders.
Okay.
And how you controlled them would be like shifting your weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen that.
So like, if you were riding one of those hoverboards, they call, where you lean forwards to go forwards, or you only put most of your weight on, like, the right to go right
yeah,
and the left to go left, It's very much like that. I got how they would be able to also stay afloat. So the wind, when it blows and it hits a cliff, it goes up or down. It's called a ridge lift.
Okay, which is a kind of updraft. There's lots of updrafts where the wind is blowing straight up.
Yeah. And then if they hit it right, then they can soar for hours. But it all depends on how the weather is.
Sure, because this isn't, hang gliders aren't powered flight.
So NASA had designed a type of hang glider that would help when, like, a spacecraft would come back down. They would have the glider on it.
Did they actually use it?
I don't know. I think they tried it.
Okay.
And it would help it, like, have a controlled descent.
Well, this shuttle itself, it's got wings that are a little like an airplane, but it basically is a glider.
Yeah.
And so it's a heavier than air kind of thing, but it's in the same idea as...
Yeah, but that was before they had the modern...
So the idea was even older than that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but they did kind of use it when they designed the shuttle, that it's triangle shape that you have for a hang glider is what the shuttle is shaped like underneath.
The wings, yeah.
Yeah.
So, hang gliders, also about how they work, is that you get to a hill or a cliff, and then you would push yourself off after getting in the right position, which would be like carrying it on your back for a bit.
Yeah. How and heavy are they? Do you have any clue?
No. All it says is that it's lighter than, it's heavier than air, so it has to be light because you can't, you have to carry it first.
Sure.
And then also, it has to be able to glide, because you could make something like a kite, but it could be heavy, and it would still have the exact same idea as a hang glider, but it would just pull down.
Right, really you'd have to have a stronger wind to keep it aloft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I bet they get lighter and lighter as we get more and more complex fabrics that we keep designing.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else?
Two Americans hold records for hang gliding. Dustin Martin holds the record for flying over 500 miles across Texas, which is also 764 kilometers. He used energy bars and different drinks. And another guy were trying to win, and he stayed aloft for 11 hours. And he only got 3 miles further than John Durand of Australia. Another guy named Chad Elchin did the most consecutive loops with a hang glider, which was 95 loops total. Nobody has tried passing him since 2001.
I sure wouldn't. I'd be so sick.
Yeah. Don't forget, you can find links to all the things we've talked about today by visiting the show notes page, creationscience4kids.com/sorrow, to let your friends know about this podcast and ministry.
And to connect with all the rest of the things we do with the podcast, stop by the web address I got just for you, cs4ks, the initials of the show, .com, and find out how to send us your own recording. Write us an Apple Podcast review, drop us a note, become a monthly supporter, and see the heart of why this ministry is so important. Oh, by the way, if you have friends using Google, they have a new podcast app and you can find us there. We're also on Spotify. So if you have friends that use Spotify for listening, they can check us out. And remember, running this podcast and ministry isn't free. Plus, it takes a lot of time. We now have a Patreon account where you can help us out, like Pastor Brian Bettworth and the Academy of Christian Apologetics for Moms. Thank you. If just a few of our listeners help, even with just a few dollars a month, it will help cover the rest of our basic expenses, and anything above that will help us improve things for the future. Visit cs4ks.com to find out how you can get involved. And we also do accept one-time donations, and I am very grateful for Jennifer, who just sent us one at the end of 2018. Thank you so much. It's going to be a huge help for maintaining the costs of the website and media hosting. Every little bit is appreciated. All right, now for the joke. What animal wears a coat in the winter and pants in the summer?
I don't know.
A dog. It pants in the summer.
Yeah. Well, this finishes up our show for today. Until next time, have fun treasuring our amazing universe and creator.
Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created. Revelation 4:11.